Well, God bless you guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
You look fantastic. Thank you for being here today. Hey, this is an important series that we're in the middle of. If you have not been here, you've missed a week, for some reason you haven't been able to catch up with the messages, I really, really, really want to strongly encourage you. Download the Summit Church app if you haven't already, or go to mysummit.church and listen to the messages. Here's why. I am absolutely 100% convinced that you are either struggling, dealing, fighting, battling with emotional health, you have in the past, or you're going to in the future, and this is an important series for you to be a part of. Or, just as importantly, somebody important in your life is dealing with and they're looking for a safe place to go to with some of their struggles and battles, and they don't know who's safe around them, and it can be very isolating and alienating. You know, there's a passage of scriptures in Proverbs 23:7, that says, as a man thinks, so is he. Or I memorized it in the King James, as a man thinketh, so is he. Now, that actually is a passage, if you read it in some other translations, it's actually a passage about a guy, and it says, he'll tell you to eat all you want, but he'll be fuming inside that he has to pay the bill. Because here's what that means, is no matter what we do on the outside, the real us is what we're thinking on the inside, what we're feeling on the inside, because all of us are really good at putting on a front. All of us are really good at projecting something that's not authentic and it's not true, and it feels very unsafe and very vulnerable to be true. And really, can you imagine if we all emoted all the time, if we all put our thoughts out there all the time, if we all put everything we feel out there all the time, it would be a messy, messy world. So maybe there's some health in the fact that we know how to regulate some of those, but it also has convinced us that really nowhere is a safe place for us to be authentic or true to our thoughts. But what if all of our thoughts happen to be based in health, happen to be safer emotions, happen to be well-regulated emotions, happen to be well-thought-out emotions, happen to be ones that we wouldn't be afraid to show out loud? Listen to what it says in Philippians 4:8. I've certainly read this many, many times before, and I want to do it again. Finally, brothers and sisters, that's all of us, fill your minds. This is an activity that you and I are responsible to do. We're responsible to take ownership of our thoughts. Fill your minds with beauty and truth. Not just fun, pleasant things, because that's beautiful, but it's not always authentic and true. So fill your minds with beauty and truth. They're not mutually exclusive. They can exist together. Meditate. That doesn't mean Eastern meditation. It means fix your thoughts on, set your thoughts on whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is good, whatever is virtuous, whatever is praiseworthy. Those are amazing thoughts for you and I to carry around. And what if that was what was filling our minds and filling our emotions? But the reality is that's not what fills our thoughts and fills our emotions, because we have to battle with negative thinking. We have to battle with unhealthy thoughts. We have to battle with destructive thoughts. We actually have to battle with emotions that go so deep they've convinced us that the only thing we can do is end our lives to make all of it stop. That's how destructive and powerful our thought life can be. And that's what brings us to this important passage, 2 Corinthians 10:5 says this: we are demolishing arguments and ideas. We're demolishing thoughts that are outside of us and thoughts that originate inside of us. That's what that means. We're demolishing arguments and ideas. Every high and mighty philosophy that pits itself against the knowledge of the one true God. In other words, every thought that pretends like it knows more than God knows. We are taking prisoner of every thought, every emotion, and subduing them into obedience to the anointed one. That means this: in order for our minds to be full of all the good things and our emotions to be all the good things and healthy things that we want, we have to spend some time doing some practical warfare and bringing down the thoughts that are destroying us. And so that, believe it or not, is the shortest message you are ever going to hear at Summit Church. My message is done. Isn't that amazing? And the crowd erupted in applause. Yes, absolutely. Because what I wanted to do today is spend some time giving you practical conversation and practical tools to actually bring those thoughts into submission. And I've asked a good friend of mine, Tony Overbay, who is a great therapist. He's an amazing podcaster. He speaks all over. He's got book contracts. This guy's a big deal. One day he's going to be too big for us, and you're going to go, I remember when that dude was on our stage. He's been here before. He did something on marriage and did something on parenting and blew it out of the water, and we really love having him, and he's a great friend of the church. And so would you guys help welcome therapist Tony Overbay?
Okay, you almost made me want to leave, Chris.
I've set high expectations for you.
A little bit, I think so.
Thank you for being here. I know it's a big deal. You're a busy, busy, busy guy.
I'm not Tony that and busy, I have Chris.
To,
I'm really
Tony
not.
And I have to
I'm
meet.
Not that big of a deal. I have to say that, by the way.
We have to meet at 9 o'clock at night because that's about when his day ends. And so I'm super thankful you're here. And you and I had a little time to talk about some of these things, and I know you're super passionate about this. You help walk people through this all week long, and I kind of wanted to, and you know this is my heart, is to sort of bring a really good therapy session.
Okay.
A group therapy session, only they don't get to participate.
This is a safe place. Everything stays in the room. Yeah, confidentiality. Okay, now I'm feeling it. Everybody lay down.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Everybody turn your aisle into a couch. Lay on your neighbor. That shouldn't be awkward at
right.
all. Yeah, so for you guys, for the sake of this, number one, it's likely we won't get to every good thought and every good tip and every practical thing. So you and I are going to, Tony does a great podcast that you may think about subscribing to, and super helpful. It's called The Virtual Couch, and has a lot of these kind of thoughts and a lot more focused and concentrated than what we'll get to do here. But we're actually going to do one as kind of a continuation of this conversation. And you're going to release it Thursday as a special episode?
Yeah, exactly. Chris and I, Pastor Chris and I are going to get together because that short sermon was just a trick. So he's going to do a very long sermon of sorts on my podcast.
Yeah. So today is hopefully going to hit some really good highlight stuff. I encourage you, go crazy with your notes. And we're going to sort of use our outline as a general guide to get us through this conversation, but we want to hop right into it. Hey, so here's what we're going to talk about. To navigate my way out of negative and destructive thoughts, because that's what we're taking on today, bringing those into submission, I need to, number one, realize that everyone deals with negative thoughts, and I'm no exception. So huge key is don't exclude yourself from this conversation because you think that there's other people who need it worse than you do. Every single one of us, it's a tool that the enemy uses. We live in brokenness because of our sin. Negative thoughts are the consequence of the kind of world that we live in and the kind of temptations that we face. So you are the target of this conversation, okay? So, Tony, you had some amazing thoughts, and we talked a little bit about what we were going to...
Yeah, well, and you teed it up. So, I mean, and I love where Pastor Chris starts, that we all have a million different thoughts going through our minds. And even if you look at data, in one given minute, you can have 100 different thoughts. Hmm. And so you can have thoughts of happy thoughts, sad thoughts. Right now, you've probably already thought, man, the gleam on that guy's head is insane, right? You've thought about, really, what's a podcast? I mean, a million different thoughts, but it's kind of wild that why we attach to the thoughts that we do. And so I want to do a really quick introduction on why it can be so difficult to be happy. And so if you think about it, our minds now, our modern minds now, are designed to analyze and plan and create, and they can do so many wonderful things. But if we kind of take a step back, and I think of even if you go back to, let's look at Old Testament times, and all the fire and brimstone and all these sort of things, is that, you know, we kind of grew up, our minds grew up in a way that was essentially what we call a don't get killed device. So, I mean, your brain was designed, you know, you needed to basically eat and drink and find shelter and, procreate, replenish the earth, those good things. But it wasn't to joke. I mean, think about even the term of court jesters. We used to have to tell somebody, it is now time for the court jester to come in and crack jokes. And now we crack jokes all the time. Yeah. So it wasn't designed that way initially. So with every generation, our human mind was in continually trying to look out for what it had to worry about. It was becoming increasingly skilled at predicting things that we had to be worried about. Mm. And so back in the old days, we were basically making sure that we weren't going to get attacked by strangers, creatures, that sort of thing. Yeah. But now avoiding danger. Now we are judging things every day in our lives. Are they good or bad? Mm. And are they safe or dangerous or harmful or helpful? But now those things have evolved into it's about, are we going to lose a job? Are we going to get a disease? What happens if something happens to one of our kids? There's so many things now that our brain is still doing this thing where it's looking out. It thinks it's doing us a favor by looking out and trying to predict danger and trying to avoid danger. So it's kind of a no wonder that our brains are so focused on what if, the what ifs. What if this happens?
And it seems maybe we're overly focused and afraid of things that don't pose a threat to us at all. So our mind is completely filled with negative thoughts when there may not be anything to worry about.
So we worry, we spend so much time worrying about things that probably aren't ever going to happen.
Right.
But our brains think that they're protecting us. Because again, we've kind of, we've grown into this creature that no longer looks at it as a don't get killed device of the brain. But we also want to mix in love and passion and all of these wonderful things. But the brain's constantly still trying to say, but what if? What if this happens? What if this happens? And so, we sometimes avoid situations because of those what ifs. And so, and we also, and I think this is important, we have this inherent need to belong to a group. And early on, if your group booted you out, now all of a sudden you literally might be eaten by the wolves. So not only are we trying to see what is ahead or trying to predict things that might get us, and then again, most of those things that won't, but we're also now comparing ourselves to others. Yeah, and so we start comparing, am I fitting in? Am I doing the right thing? Am I contributing enough? Am I not? And so am I doing anything that might get me rejected? So if you put those two things together, that's quite a combo pack of, we're kind of...
And we have to deal with those 24 hours a day, seven days a week, because social media presents those scenarios to us. We're always connected to people, judging ourselves against people. Somebody throws out an idea that's threatening to us.
At that one. So think of if you see somebody that shows pictures of a wonderful vacation. Now, first of all, you think that's all they do is vacation, and that vacation was amazing. And if you've been on vacations, especially, and I go back to, I have kids here, but we used to take pictures and make photo books of vacations so that they would think that they actually had a good time. Because at the time of the vacation, I think at Disneyland, and I realize I need to slow things down here. But, you can never go to the right place at the same time. Somebody wants a corn dog. Somebody wants a churro.
Yeah.
The churro is the right answer. We all know that. But we're doing all these things, and the kids are crying, and you're holding one, and you're not. But then you're taking pictures, and you're telling them you're having a good time. So we see that stuff on social media, and we think, man, they're having a good time. And then we start thinking, okay, but what if I did that? If I did that, then we might run out of our savings, or I'm afraid to fly, or what if something happened to the airplane, or what if I go to Hawaii, and what if that's the one time that there's a shark, and... So we can't even be happy in the moment when we're seeing those things that we're even comparing ourselves to.
Yeah.
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 Sorry, I could keep going.
No, you keep going.
Okay.
Keep going. You're good. So then
I just want to make this point as well. So we can kind of see why it can be difficult to be happy. I just wanted to set the stage there. And there's a social psychologist named David Wagner who back in the 80s, so not that long ago when you and I had this flowing hair, where he did a lot of work, but he did a lot of work of then just saying, okay, what's ironic then is when we feel stressed, then we do happen to attach to those negative thoughts and those negative feelings, and just the concept of that then causes us to even have more negative feelings. Mm. And so where I just want to end this part is everybody. We go back to that. Everybody has unwanted thoughts. There's a pretty fascinating thing that has a really nerdy name called ironic process theory, but it's really called unwanted thought syndrome. And what that says, and I love this concept, is that everybody has these thoughts. And I like to give an example. If you get me on a tall building, for whatever reason, my brain immediately says, you could totally jump. My legs get all jiggly.
Right.
I have not jumped to this day. I can tell you that.
Huh.
So we all have these So we all have these thoughts. They're angry thoughts or inappropriate thoughts. Whatever, we have them.
Right.
They're just
right.
going through our brain. But so everybody has them. Just because you have them, the second tenet of inappropriate thought syndrome is just because you have them doesn't mean that that's who you are or that you're going to do those things. I think that's a very important one. And then the third part of that, and this is key, thought suppression doesn't work. And that's the thing where when we get down, we've set the stage of why we start to feel the way we do. And then we tell ourselves, I shouldn't be thinking that.
Yeah.
I always say, whenever I speak about this, that I say your brain actually has a little, they're having fun with you. Your brain's having fun with you. It has a sign. And when you say to yourself, I shouldn't be thinking that, your brain goes, what, this? You know, it holds up the sign.
Right.
You know, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't even not think about the thing I'm trying not to think about.
Yeah.
And your brain's like, you mean this thing?
Yeah.
You know? And so inappropriate thought syndrome doesn't work. This is that thing where, you know, and maybe you've heard this before, but this is the study that said, hey, whatever you do right now, don't think of a fluffy white polar bear. Just do not think about it. That's my only thing I'm asking you to. And everyone in the room just thought of one, except for usually it's young teenage boys who say, no, I didn't. But so thought suppression doesn't work. What we are going to get to or learn today is that having those thoughts, we really need to learn how to just kind of step back and realize there's a whole bunch of thoughts coming through my brain. And I'm a big fan of just kind of looking at those thoughts going, oh, okay, I see what you're doing there, brain.
Right.
You know, trying to throw that, you could jump off the, you know, the inside atrium of the Embassy Suites into that koi pond.
Yeah.
Not to be specific, I just mean that.
Seems really specific, but go ahead.
A little bit. But anyway, so just I want you, you know, you're normal. You know, we have these thoughts, but the more we worry about those thoughts, the worse that they can often get.
And so we need to throw out the idea that we can just unthink our bad thoughts. We can't just go, don't think. That's never going to work for us.
It doesn't. And even on that, it breaks my heart when people say as well, where they wake up one day and they say, all right, you know what? I am just going to focus on positive and have good, happy thoughts today.
Right.
And I love that. I do the same, but then inevitably, there goes a thought right by my head that wasn't so positive. And then what do? We go, I can't even do this.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even stay happy for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's really learning how to step back and just notice, there's a thought.
Totally normal for us to do that.
Totally normal.
Okay. Yeah. Number two is this: to navigate our way out of negative and destructive thoughts, we need to avoid old habits that keep me trapped in my negative thinking.
Yeah, and so here I like to I'll make this so quick. I know time goes so fast, but I like to talk about what I call the emotional baseline theory, and I will make this so fast. When life is going amazingly well, I like to say that your baseline of emotions are high, and so you are met with decisions every day, and you're going to respond to them based on where your emotional baseline is. So when you do feel down, or maybe you've been sick, or maybe you've lost a job, or there's something that's happened with a loved one, your emotional baseline is low. And so you are going to respond differently to those same things that come at you every day.
Yeah.
So those are the things that start to keep us trapped in this negative thinking, is when we start to feel down and we don't feel like responding, or when there are people around us that say, come on, just come outside. Let's just go do something. When your baseline of emotions are low, it really looks heavy to try to get out and do something different.
Well, you said something when we were talking that where you decide to go eat is affected by where your emotional baseline
is. Yeah.
When my emotional baseline is low, I look for comfort in eating. I don't look for satisfying a hunger. I go, I want something that makes me feel safe and warm, and it's usually fried.
Yes.
is what makes me feel safe and warm.
I will say that is a temporary situation. But yes, that is the where we go.
Yeah.
I mean, that gets into a whole other thing. Maybe we'll talk about that on the podcast, but where when we have had experiences where we have comfort ate, or where we've turned to things that haven't been very good for us, whether it's gambling, alcohol, pornography, all those sort of things, you know, the brain does get a temporary relief. And so what starts to happen is we create these neural pathways of, when I'm feeling down, you know, your brain, again, thinking it's doing you a favor, says, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
We got a very quick pick-me-up over here and this giant bag of candy. And, you know, right then you're like, I want it. And then as soon as
there's reward in that.
There is.
Even if it's temporary, there's reward in that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Versus somebody going, hey, when your emotional baseline is low, think about getting into a counseling, and you go, oh gosh, then there's money involved and I don't have time to take off work. The real solution feels negative, and the negative solution seems positive.
Yeah, well, let me hit those real quick too. So there's ways that people typically deal with the negative emotions. One of those is denial. I think that's one of the most ones that we do often, where we say, I'm not even going to worry about it. It'll be fine. It'll go away.
Right.
Right. There's also withdrawal, which I think withdrawal is one that we really need to watch out for. Again, excuse me, it's really normal, I've identified that, to have these negative emotions. So we're going to have up and down days. Where things start to get more, we want to put more attention, is when we start to withdraw and not want to do the things that we normally want to do.
Right.
So this is the thing where if you love exercise and you don't want to go exercise, or I have a client right now that loves crafting, and they have all the craft supplies in the world, but they don't want to craft. Mm. So when those things happen, that's one of the ways that we start to deal with this negative thinking. We withdraw, and the hard part about withdrawing is that, you know, we need to interact with people, that we are social creatures.
Right.
And so when we withdraw, there's a part of us that does get to continue that what's wrong with me story that our brain plays in our minds.
Right.
So as hard as it can be, and we'll get to some of that too, when we are feeling this way, we really need to find those people that we can talk to or that are safe for us. And I love how you said at the beginning, even if you're not dealing with this, if you notice somebody starts to isolate or withdraw, then, you know, please reach out to them. And this is the part where I feel like, I really feel that this is where the world of the Holy Ghost resides for me and so many clients that I work with, or the Holy Spirit, where when you feel, I haven't seen somebody in a while, or I feel a prompting and I want to reach out to them, you know, even then your mind goes to this, well, I don't want to bother them. You know, right. They might be busy or whatever. Bother them.
Yeah.
You know, reach out to them. Because if you have thought about somebody that you haven't seen in a while, maybe they are withdrawing, and that's something that they need, is somebody to reach out
and maybe
and
don't take
them.
Their initial answer of how you doing, and they say, oh, I'm fine.
I love that.
But you sense that they're not.
Yeah, you know, I remember a lot of times people will say, somebody, I was at a situation where somebody, had, their spouse had passed away, and everybody was going up to them and saying, hey, let me know if I can do anything, how you doing? And they're just like, I'm good. You know, and then I got to talk with this person later, and they weren't doing well, but they had no idea what somebody could do for them. So this is the thing where I love, you know, it's okay to just bring them dinner. It's okay to go mow their lawn. It's okay to just, you know, just say, I'm just going to sit here and watch a movie with you and just to be there.
Yeah.
Just that and because we want people to care about us. We really do. We want to be heard.
Right.
I also put on here that some of the other ways that people do is bullying. But what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes it's easier for us to join in and make, you know, if we're feeling down, we will make fun of someone else because that's one of those, you know, kind of, as wild as it sounds, it makes us feel better about ourselves. Again, it's temporary in that moment. So we have to watch out for that. And then there's the concept of self-harm. When we think about self-harm, we hear often things like, you know, we hear about cutting, or we hear about those things that sometimes we hear about that a lot, especially with teenagers. Or, but self-harm can also mean binge eating and under eating or overeating or other risky behaviors. Mm-hmm. And then people often turn to substance abuse, gambling, alcohol, pornography. So those are ways that people tend to deal with these negative emotions. So I want to just bring some awareness to that, because if you are heading down that path at all, or if you see someone that is, then now's the time to do something about it, to reach out to somebody.
Yeah. That's really good. Man, I wish we could spend more time on this. All right, number three and finally is this, is to navigate my way out of destructive and unhealthy emotions, I need to choose a new path to healthier thoughts and emotions. And I put healthier because I think sometimes we set, like the vacation standard, we set the standard so high on what health looks like that we never give ourselves credit for the healthier journey to get there. And those forward movements are really something to celebrate. So,
And I think the emotional baseline piece, and I got off that, and we'll talk about that more on the podcast. But what my whole point there is, when you are feeling down, honestly, I've had people set a timer for an hour, and at an hour they get up and they walk around their house. I mean, you have to build from somewhere. And emotional baseline is really about self-care. So a lot of times we'll feel like, well, I can't spend time and read because I should be doing these other things. But if you spend a little bit of time reading and that raises your emotional baseline, things look a lot different, even from just a little bit higher up.
Yeah. So I was sharing with you that I raised my emotional baseline through impulse. I bought a little fishing boat this week.
Yes.
and next week it'll be something else because I'll go bored with that. But it really does help regulate me. If I get very stressed or there's a lot of anxiety, I'll go work on that thing. And it almost doesn't matter what it is,
right,
as long as it's healthier than the thing I'm doing, and it's harmless. You know, I go out and do that, or I go golf, or I just have something that's got to get me out of the moment, and it feels irresponsible because I should be doing something else.
Don't shoot on yourself. Right? That's what we got to remember that. I had a client once, and this is the best example I know I love of this one is he was very down, and he should be. He had a lot of things in his life that were a challenge, and so he liked to read, but every time he said he should be reading, he thought he should be reading these very spiritual tomes and that he needed to get right with God if he was going to do anything. And I totally agree. But then he was beating himself up about that.
Right.
Well, he liked to read legal thrillers, John Grisham.
Yeah.
So he prescribed himself 30 minutes of John Grisham a day. And when he did that, he felt better. And then he took a dog for a walk. And then he started doing some work. So it is, whatever kind of raises that emotional baseline.
Yeah.
So we
And then you've actually got a thing you call PATH.
Yeah, so PATH, the acronym. So PATH, pause. So I'm pausing. Acknowledge. Think and help. And I really want to spend, I know we're almost out of time here today, but I want to talk about pause. So this is a big step of once we've talked about why we have the feelings we do, when we recognize we're having those feelings or emotions, to pause. And this is because instead of acting on those feelings or emotions right away, we stop ourselves and kind of think things through. Now, if you're a mindfulness practitioner, or you can turn to your breathing, or you can turn to prayer, or or meditation, these sort of things. Some people will just count to 100 or count backwards or whatever it is to kind of get you to pause. But I think that the important thing here is that, and I want to make sure we address this, the importance of a pause. I want to bring tell a story about, there's a gentleman named Kevin Hines, and he survived a suicide attempt in 2000 of jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. And as he fell toward the water, he decided that he wanted to live, and after all, positioned himself so he hit the water in a way that he felt like he had the best chance. He suffered serious injuries, and he's a motivational speaker now, but he said his life was saved by a black seal swimming below him, and he later attributed the seal's presence as a sign from God. He's an amazing motivational speaker, but I just, you know, we can't run away from these conversations around things like suicide.
Right.
And I had shared some data with you, I know, where 29 people who have survived suicide attempts off of San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge said they regretted their decision as soon as they jumped, immediately when they jumped.
Wow.
And there's an article by a person named Stacy Friedenthal. It was titled, Where Are They Now? The Fate of Suicide Attempt Survivors. And what Dr. Friedenthal found was that out of 515 people who had intended to jump but were stopped, only 7% actually went on to take their lives later in life. So, I mean, what he found is remarkable, that suicidal crisis is often, very often, temporary.
Yeah.
And one of the messages that I think is that we hear that is not correct is that if we talk about it, that it's going to increase the, you know, suicidality. And,
yep.
And the fact is that is, it couldn't be more, yeah, so false. It's the opposite. The more we can talk about it, the numbers go down.
Yeah, as if we're planting a thought in their head they hadn't thought of before. Like we introduced an idea, like, I don't know if you know this, but there is the option of suicide.
Right, and it's like the person just wants to be able to be heard or be able to talk about it. And just a couple other things. This Dr. Friedenthal went on to found over 177 other studies throughout the world that showed similar findings. So this is a fact that talking about it doesn't make it worse. And I like that there's one former suicide survivor, Kim Baldwin, described, and this is powerful. Said the moment that he let go of the railing, he immediately thought, what am I doing? This is the worst thing I could do in my life. And he instantly thought of his wife, his daughter. He didn't want to die. He recalls realizing that everything that he had thought was unfixable was totally fixable, except for having him just jump.
Right.
And so I do find that, you know, part of this pause is when we feel or recognize these big emotions, or hopefully you can recognize those in other people as well, that then you do talk about it. You help them find this pause.
Yeah. You can, I mean, it seems absurd to jump to this conclusion, but that person may have already jumped to it. If I were to say, hey man, you doing okay? And if you say, oh, you know, blah, 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 we're going through some marriage stuff, where I'm really been struggling, whatever, to actually introduce the question and go, have you been thinking about hurting yourself at all?
Yeah.
I mean, where are you at on that?
Yeah.
And not dismiss it quickly, but actually open that can of worms and not feel like we all have to be therapists and go, okay, well, oh my gosh, I don't have the tools to fix you, so I'm not going to ask the question.
Right.
Maybe that pause for them is enough to start
bringing up the
baseline.
Bringing up the emotional baseline.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that you put that out there. The other thing is just acknowledge your feelings, and I know we're out of time here, so we'll talk about some of these things on the...
Actually, 5 minutes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's my red warning.
And I'm waiting for the music to come on behind me.
I told him not to come up because it would be weird if we were just talking about this and then there was like music behind us. We can make... I know you like that.
I really want him to follow me around everywhere. He said he's very expensive, though. I feel like if I had flowing hair and music behind me everywhere I went, then just life would be a breeze, right? So acknowledge what you're feeling, though. Okay, I'm glad we have time, because this is another one in that path. So pause, acknowledge, and I just want to talk about this concept of, it doesn't sound as cool as I want it to sound, the psychological term of private experiences. All that means is everyone in this room, you're the only, I mean, this is going to sound kind of cheesy at first, so bear with me, but you're the only you. So, and what that means is you're the only person on the face of the earth who, and we're talking nature, nurture, we're talking DNA, birth order, you know, hopes, dreams, fears, abandonments, rejections, if you move, not. You're the only person that has those experiences, and those experiences bring you to this moment right now or whatever the moment is. And so when you have the feelings you do, it's because you're human, because you've been through all of those situations. So a lot of times when people say, well, you shouldn't feel that way or shouldn't think that way, until somebody's been exactly in my shoes, you know, we really want to be heard. And that's why it can be so difficult. Even when people, bless their hearts, say things like, hey, don't worry about that, you know? I felt that way before, and here's what I did. It's like, I appreciate that, but people really need to be heard. That is where they, you know, you really need to feel like somebody understands.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even when we say, and I talk about this one often, if a kid comes up and says, I got a bad grade in math, I'm not good at math, And the parent immediately says, hey, you know, you got to do hard things, or I was bad at math too, or ask them first, because they might have a learning disability.
Right.
They might be being bullied in class. You know, they might, whatever it might be, might have narcolepsy and fall asleep every day. But find out first, because, you know, we all have our own experiences that we bring to the table, and that's why we have the thoughts and feelings we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So think, and then the last one is help. Did we skip one? No, acknowledge. Yeah, we think. So this is the one where, man, we'll talk about this more too.
Okay.
Anxiety, the brain, again, now that we've set all the table of how our emotions and thoughts work, think of what anxiety now is. So anxiety is a defense mechanism. It's a warning signal that the body's trying to do. And so it doesn't mean it doesn't mean to do bad like it often does for people that struggle with anxiety. But when you start to feel anxious because you're worried about something, your heart rate literally elevates. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, your brain starts to release this chemical called cortisol, which is a stress hormone.
Yeah.
And so again, it thinks if you're getting anxious, your body says, okay, battle stations.
Right.
And it's going to put the part of your brain that really likes to think things through and reason, it's going to tell it, you guys take a back seat for a minute because things are about to get real, you know? And so then the more you think about the things that you're thinking about, the more you feel anxious, and the more cortisol raises in your brain, and the more your rational part takes a back seat.
Yeah, and I think I read a study that said it begins to narrow your ability to choose other options. You only see one or two.
Because it thinks it's doing you a favor. Yeah. It thinks it's battle time. It's
sort of
time.
The fight or flight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
it puts
exactly
us in a very
does.
Defensive position instead of a logical, reasonable. Yeah.
So one of the first things that you can do in that scenario, so after you've kind of paused, you have to acknowledge, you start to think about what these feelings are you're going through, this is where it's important to, you know, just kind of take a few deep breaths or get outside. I went to a training once and they said the best thing you can do for anxiety is just, and he was joking, I realized after, but he said, just go to a ginormous mountain to the top of it with a 360-degree unobstructed view. You do that, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, but it's because the concept, though, is your brain wants to know that, you know, all danger has been eliminated.
Yeah.
But so the way we do that, though, is it really is to feel like we can kind of get control of our breathing, maybe start to lower the heart rate. Then the brain will say, I think the
threat's passed.
It's gone. And, yeah. So we can kind of start to calm down.
Yeah.
So I think that's important to know as well.
That's
and
good.
And the H is help, that really seek help.
And that's it?
Expecting more help. I can go on. Right?
Well, give 2 minutes on help. I was like, we were going. We were,
I know, right?
He's all, it's help.
Too.
Just fill that in. We're done.
Yeah. Go get help. It'll work. But that's where then it does, you have to learn to be vulnerable. And that's where I like what you said about finding people that are safe.
Yeah.
And so, and I feel like when people have this knowledge, sometimes that does make it easier for them to reach out. So if you are the person that someone is reaching out to, please just do me a favor and just listen. You know, just hey, tell me how you're feeling. Tell me what that's like. Tell me what you're going through.
Feel obligated to fix them.
No, you don't have to fix them.
Yeah.
You don't. As a matter of fact, this is where I say bless our hearts when we say, well, have you thought about this? Or have you tried this? Or what about this? What the person often does is they kind of start to feel defensive because they feel like, because they probably have thought of those things.
Yeah.
So they have tried to do those things.
Yeah.
So the first place is just to kind of go from empathy. This is the time where you are going to become, you know, someone's lifeline if you reach out to them. And if you are the person going through that, now's the time where you can phone a friend or you can use a lifeline.
Yeah.
And so if I can kind of end with, this is the part where if I want to kind of tie things back to the spiritual and I go back to that, God's the only one that knows exactly what you've been through.
Right.
And we think about that atonement of the Savior, Christ,
yeah.
and the time that he spent in the Garden of Gethsemane, bleeding through every pore, and that he died not only for our sins, but I firmly believe that he also died for so that he has felt all of our pains and our iniquities. He's the master with empathy. And so when you really do feel like no one understands you, that Christ is the person that you can turn to first.
Right.
And get that clarity and kind of feel that compassion and understanding. And sometimes that's the place we need to go to then feel like we can go and reach out for help. If you feel like you've disappointed him, you haven't.
Right.
You know, he's the one that knows you're down here. I mean, I always say that when we get up to heaven and we say, hey, sorry, I kept going back and doing this thing, he's not going to let us finish that sentence.
Right.
He's going to just bring us in. No, I'm sorry things were so rough down there.
Yeah.
You know, you did great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's kind of, I guess, my message.
Awesome. Awesome. Can I have Gavin come back? And I want to take just a second here. You know, Tony ended with an excellent thought. Isaiah 53:5 is a prophetic verse. Isaiah was a prophet in the Old Testament and forecasted Jesus and not only who Jesus would be, but what Jesus would do. And Isaiah 53:5 says, and by his stripes, the stripes on his back, the whipping that he took, it says, by his stripes we are healed. And I, again, because I believe we're holistic, I believe that it means we can be emotionally and mentally healed, physically healed, and spiritually healed. And there's wholeness in faith. There's wholeness in Christ. But if you look throughout Scripture, it's not as if God just goes, you got to just pray your way through it. For a long time in churches, if you had something and something was going on, sorry, is Kevin? Oh, there you are. Hi, buddy. A long time in churches, if you were sick, if you were especially emotionally, it was weird because when you were physically sick, people would pray for you and nobody had an issue with you going to the doctor. But if you were struggling emotionally and mentally, when I grew up in church, it was, you did not go to a therapist. You did not go to a psychologist. That was absolutely taboo because they really distrusted and believed that those people would mess with your mind and move you away from faith. Why is it we feel comfortable if we break an arm? We don't walk into the garage and duct tape a 2x4 to it and go, I'm good, I can fix this myself. Everybody go, you're crazy to try that. Yet we'll try to walk through emotional brokenness and mental brokenness by ourselves and think that we're capable of fixing ourselves. So I think one of the most important things that you and I can do today is decide that we're going to refuse to walk through emotional brokenness alone. There are some amazing tools that you got today. This was a great mini therapy session, and I'm going to encourage you to do three things. Number one, begin to reach out to a safe person. Not everything is therapy actionable. Maybe the thing you're going through doesn't elevate and rise to the level of needing to go to a therapist. But if after talking to someone and just getting, I was talking to a friend the other day and they said they just needed to kind of blah, just get it out. And once it was said, then they felt way better and they moved on. And sometimes that's all you need. But sometimes that's not all you need. And when you find that talking it out or that the people you're talking to, they're not therapists. I don't do marriage counseling. I might sit down and do some coaching with people. And if I identify very quickly that they've got some big, big issues, I just go, hey guys, this is where our time kind of has to transition. And I need to move you into really just referring you to a great therapist because I can't work this stuff out with you. I'm your biggest cheerleader. I'll be in your corner. I'm going to help whenever I can. I'm going to affirm the things that you're learning in therapy, and I'm here to talk with you. I'll go to coffee and listen to all the good things that are happening and all the progress that's being made, but I'm not equipped. And guess what? Your friends, your spouse, as much as they love you, people you trust, unless they are a therapist, they're not equipped to walk you the long road to healing, and so maybe you need to get into therapy. And number three is this. It's not shameful in your faith to be broken emotionally. We don't feel shame if we're dealing. Lisa was really, really sick. By the way, she's back today and she's doing amazing. I know a lot of you were very worried and concerned and sick as she's ever been, but God really walked her through it. Lisa didn't feel spiritual crisis because of that and didn't feel like she was a bad follower of Christ because of her sickness. But yet when it comes to mental illness and emotional struggles and suicidal thoughts and depression and anxiety, we feel an emotional, a spiritual disconnect. We feel a shame in our faith because of that, and you have to stop because that's the enemy working to keep you distanced from God, who is your healer. And so I really want to encourage you, take those three action steps and then tune in, check out Virtual Couch on wherever you get your podcast from, and tune in for sort of the continued conversation on this. And then Tony actually has a lot of very specific ones. So if you're dealing with stuff about anxiety or pornographic addiction or any of those kind of things, there's resources for you to kind of start that journey, maybe confidentially, and then move into a conversation that's a little bit bigger. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? And we're going to pray and finish today. Father, you're so good to us. You're so loving. And you're drawn to our suffering, and that's why you sent your son to the cross so that that complete and untainted sacrifice, there was nothing wrong, there was nothing more needed than what Jesus did for us on the cross to bring healing emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And we call on your healing power into our lives to begin the work of helping us walk out of the dangerous path of emotional unhealthiness and isolation. God, we're broken people. We're going to be sick physically, and we're going to be sick emotionally, and we're going to experience unhealthiness in our thoughts. And the more tools we have, the more quote-unquote medicines that we have in our cabinet to work our way through this, the better off we are. And we thank you for being a God that loves us in our brokenness and is drawn to us in our brokenness. And I believe for healing to begin in lives today. I believe for marriages to be restored. I believe for hearts to be restored. I believe for minds to be restored, because God, that's the way you created us. To live with the mind of Christ and to live with the Holy Spirit guiding us and leading us, not to be leading the Holy Spirit and having him have to catch up to sort of self-destructive behavior, but God, for us to pause and sit back and realize that we're in good hands. And so I'm so thankful for our time today and what you're going to begin to do in lives. In Jesus' name.